It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a Wisconsin project aims to understand the roots of prejudice and stereotypes and to help us overcome them in our daily lives. First, it's time for the Week in Washington, when we look at the biggest stories in national politics. Independence Day just passed, and it wasn't a typical one for GOP politicians this year. In some states, the celebrations were overshadowed by tension and questions about the Republican health care bill aimed at replacing the Affordable Care Act. You can share your thoughts on the future of the GOP health care bill by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post over on the Central Time Facebook page. Harry Anton joins us now to talk about that topic and many more. He's a senior political writer and analyst for 538. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
We usually see politicians run into the spotlight on the 4th of July, attending parades and other kinds of events. What was different this year, especially for Republican senators?
Well, it seemed that they didn't want to run into the spotlight. Look, you had senators like Cory Gardner, who's in the swing state of Colorado, even though he's not up for re-election in 2018. He is up for re-election 2020, and you see him basically staying home, not wanting to march in these parades. Why? Because we know how unpopular the Republican health care plan is, and they don't want to be basically bullied at these parades and saying, you better not vote for this thing. They want to stay away from that and stay away from the crowds.
What about the Republican senators who have said that they will not vote for the current health care bill as it stands, at least?
You know, we did see, in fact, Susan Collins, who's obviously a moderate Republican up in the state of Maine. She actually got congratulations from a lot of her constituents thanking her for not voting for it. Up and down the parade route, she, in fact, said as much. Or if you go up into Alaska with Lisa Murkowski, who's, you know, seen as a swing vote on this piece of legislation, she, in fact, said that although people weren't necessarily telling her to vote one way or another, in fact, perhaps just vote for the best for Alaska, those people who did, in fact, demonstrate a position said, we hope you vote against this. And I think that's just what you see nationwide. There's a lot of enthusiasm against this bill. It's not just that it's unpopular, but those who hold enthusiasm about it are very much against it.
And did protesters use especially the occasion of the 4th, a very patriotic holiday, as an opportunity to criticize this bill?
Sure. I think part of it obviously is being the 4th and the idea that, you know, this is America's day. This is the day where, you know, we demonstrate our political power and our political will and the willingness to speak out against authority. But I think it was also just an opportunity where if, you know, you're marching in a parade, obviously you're a sitting duck. You're someone who has to listen to the voices that are coming in from the outside. And Democrats have done a very good job so far, or people at least who are you know, let's say in line with Democratic ideas, have done a very good job of organizing and making sure that their voices are held, whether it be a parade or be at these town halls that we saw earlier this year about health care.
And Mitch McConnell is pretty much the face of the Republican effort right now. How was he received back in his district?
I don't think that Mitch McConnell, you know, this bill, what is so amazing to me about this bill is that it's uniformly unpopular. In fact, we ran a piece, a few months ago that basically said that even in the reddest of districts, this is not a particularly well-liked bill. Whether, you know, you go down to Alabama or you go north into New York, this is just a bill that isn't particularly well-liked. And it's not a bill that's well-liked among Republicans. And that's what I think is so interesting about it, is that they've managed to craft a bill that is not well-liked by pretty much anyone across the political spectrum.
You said that people who agree with what would be identified as Democratic positions about the health care bill did a good job of using the holiday and using access to their representatives to push their point. What about the Democratic establishment? Have they been using the opposition that's been coming up for Republicans to their benefit?
I think that they have for the most part. Obviously, Democrats have done a good job of unifying around a single position early on. There weren't any Democrats in the House who voted for the Republican health care bill, and there weren't any Democrats in the Senate who said that they'd vote for this current version of the health care bill. And Democrats have done a good job of fundraising, a good job of getting out there and offering their message. I think that there are some issues where Democrats are divided, but health care is definitely not one of them. This is one where Democrats across the board are uniformly basically in line and being very much against this health care bill. And that's something that can't be said the same for Republicans, who are much more split on it, especially Republican voters.
We're talking with Harry Enten right now, taking a look at the week in politics in Washington. He is senior political writer and analyst for 538. Harry, let's move on to President Trump and his continuing, I would say battle, perhaps, with the media. And some of the biggest news over the weekend was a tweet he sent out in which he was punching and body slamming someone with a CNN logo superimposed on their head. What kind of fallout has there been since that?
Well, I would, you know, say that there has been fallout. And to be clear, what exactly occurred was Donald Trump in his pre-presidential days, you know, obviously was an entertainer. He appeared in many movies. He also appeared in the World Wrestling Entertainment a match. He wrestled in one match. Obviously, that World Wrestling Entertainment, although, you know, is certainly dangerous to take part in, is not real. It's scripted. And what essentially happened was he was body slamming one of the opponents or one of the mock opponents, and someone put a picture of FNN, you know, fake news network or whatever it was, right on his face of the opponent. And so, you know, a lot of people interpreted that as him saying that violence against the media was okay. That, of course, was an interpretation. Some, I think, people who were perhaps more fans of Donald Trump would argue this was a fake thing, you know, and he's just saying, I don't like, you know, the fake news media. But among people who are certainly members of the media, they took it as a threat against them. And remember, it was no more than a month ago, I think, that in the state of Montana, or maybe it's a little bit more than a month ago, in the state of Montana, where a Republican candidate for the House literally did body slam a reporter. So I think reporters are very, very sensitive about that.
And this is actually coming close on the heels of President Trump criticizing MSNBC host Mika Brzezinski and talking about her once as, quote, still bleeding badly from a facelift. So how is the White House trying to handle the kind of constant fallout around these tweets right now focused on the media?
You know, it's so difficult. I give no one in that White House who doesn't necessarily know what Trump's going to tweet, you know, it's a very, very difficult job for them. Obviously, some of them, some of the people who are closer to Trump try and defend him as much as they possibly can. Others perhaps offer no comments, and certainly Republicans who are outside of the administration have been very much against those tweets. Indeed, you know, one of the conversations we had at 538 in a piece that will be coming out relatively shortly was basically about how the media can team up with Republicans and come out against Trump for his personal comments, whether it be the body slamming or the comments against women like he had against Mika Brzezinski, and there can be a unified effort against that because it's not being seen as partisan. The media is much more willing to critique Trump on issues that aren't, say, you know, tax cuts or the health care bill, something that's more along the lines of what is generally deemed as presidential activity or presidential material or the way a president should act. Essentially, the media is very much willing to critique Trump on that, and so are his fellow Republicans. And so it hasn't been necessarily a good week for Trump from that perspective.
Are there efforts, do you think, within the White House staff to try to either limit how much the president is tweeting or the topics on which he's expressing himself?
Sure. I mean, you know, look, we always get these reports out from unnamed sources that people within the White House wish that Trump would stay on topic on Twitter. But the fact of the matter is Donald Trump's a grown man and is going to tweet whenever he wants to tweet. And there's no one who can really tell Donald Trump, the President of the United States, not to tweet. I do think at times it certainly takes Trump off of message and opens him to critiques that perhaps he wishes he weren't open to. But on the other end of the equation, you know, it does take the media's eye off of the health care ball, which is a very unpopular bill. And instead, we're talking about Trump's tweets, which, although, you know, most people would agree, if you look at polling, that they wish he didn't tweet as much. When it comes down to who do you trust more, the media or, say, CNN, Republicans are very much in the corner of Donald Trump, while perhaps the overall electorate's more divided. So it's not necessarily clear that his tweeting hurts him, although I'm pretty sure it doesn't help him.
On the topic of tweeting, National Public Radio has a tradition of broadcasting the Declaration of Independence each 4th of July, having a variety of their on-air and off-air voices reading segments of it. But this year, they decided to kind of update that a little. In addition to the broadcast, they also tweeted out the whole document line by line. What happened as a result?
Well, Some people didn't really seem to know what was going on. They critiqued the tweets that were coming out from NPR, thinking that they were political in some way. They thought, you know, especially when it came to the sections over King George and fighting back against a king or a tyrant, that they were talking about Trump. They thought that somehow this was political in some way, when in fact it wasn't at all. Which I guess speaks in one way to the ignorance of some people on Twitter, which isn't so much of a surprise if you're on Twitter, but in another way I think speaks to the fact that people of a certain political point of view are going to think that anything that's coming out of the media or their Twitter account is somehow a critique of the president when it's no such thing.
What I find really interesting about that, Harry, is that I think in a way that really hasn't happened, at least not for many, many, many years, people actually, well, first of all, read the Declaration of Independence in short bursts like that, but also really saw what a revolutionary document it was in the first place.
Yeah, you know, I think that, look, it sometimes can be, you know, if you're an American right now, I mean, some people's lives change dramatically when we go from one president to the next. But, you know, for most people, we're going about our everyday lives the same way that we did last year, even if we liked or didn't like the president who was elected. But, you know, back in 1776, that was a real revolution. That was a real war that was being fought. That was speaking out against the current leader at the time, you know, the King of England. And that was somebody who threatened death to those who went against him. That's a real revolution. That's not a political revolution that some in this country argue that we should have. That was a bloody revolution, one in which arms were taken up, and that's a very, very different situation than what we see right now in this country.
You mentioned, Harry, that some Trump supporters especially took issue with it, thinking that it was aimed at the current president instead of the past king. And were there others that had any problem with the NPR presentation of the Declaration of Independence in that format?
I think that, you know, people just generally, you know, get confused. There were a lot of tweets from a lot of different people who were like, why are you doing this? What is this about? People who just didn't even know what was going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just go back to the whole thing that I think that it does in some ways speak to a misunderstanding of what exactly the Declaration of Independence is and what it means to this country. And I think that, if someone had just posted a tweet of the entire Declaration of Independence at one time and that people understood what was going on, that would have been one thing. But I think in these short little spats that on Twitter, I think sometimes the nuance can get lost, that people are just joining midstream. But it's also the fact that, you know, the Declaration of Independence is a whole document. That's what makes it so great. It's line to line that makes it great as a whole, not necessarily one individual line which doesn't tell a whole story. And sometimes I think on Twitter that can get lost, that entire story.
There's an update on efforts by the Environmental Protection Agency to at least slow down some Obama-era regulations. Environmentalists recently had a win after the EPA tried to delay implementation of methane regulations. What exactly happened there, Harry?
Well, essentially, you know, the EPA under President Trump is obviously a very different organization than it was, or member, a part of the administration than it was under Barack Obama. And there were all these things about introducing new methane regulations that Scott Pruitt, who's the head of the EPA, wanted essentially to delay. And the D.C. Circuit Court said, that's not going to happen. You can't do that. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously this is another example of Trump getting, quote-unquote, beat in the courts. The lower courts so far of this administration, whether it be the EPA or whether it be the immigration ban, have not ruled favorably for this president. And I think, you know, it does set up a battle, at least for the rest of this administration, between the lower courts and the Trump administration, where they're not going to allow him in their minds to get away with stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, obviously a lot of this will come down to what the higher courts end up deciding. But again, this basically throws another cog in the wheel. You know, it's just another thing that the Trump administration, as it's quote-unquote trying to change Washington, has just faced a lot of difficulty from these lower courts, and I'm not sure if that's going to end anytime soon.
We're recapping the week's biggest stories in national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us what your reactions are to Republican senators trying to move their new health care bill forward. Did it affect your 4th of July or how you saw Independence Day? And tell us what you thought about President Trump's tweet of a video of him punching and body slamming CNN. Do you think it crossed a line? What do you think of the White House response? That's 800-642-1234 to join in or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll get to that after this short break here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're picking up the conversation now with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. We're looking at the week's top stories from Washington, D.C. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. What are your reactions to the president's tweet of him beating up CNN? Do you think the president should be able to do that given Twitter's own rules of use? Do you think he crossed a line? Also, NPR recently tweeted out the entire Declaration of Independence. What are your thoughts on some people's reactions? And how would you react? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Harry, I just want to touch back on something we were talking about, the Trump administration having another defeat in the courts, this time about the EPA trying to delay implementation of Obama-era methane regulations. You know, one of the things that's been coming out recently is how far behind the Trump administration is in filling a lot of posts within the administration. Do you think in some way this is a reflection of that, that they just don't have as deep the knowledge and experience that maybe they need to be able to craft these things in a more effective way?
Yeah, absolutely, that's the case. And, you know, I think that you see that with the EPA. And, you know, as I mentioned before, when we're talking about, you know, decisions that the courts have reversed Trump on, I think you saw that with the immigration ban as well. You know, they came out with that, and it was clearly very rushed, and it was people who didn't necessarily know how to put things together and things that would easily be struck down by courts when they could have worded it differently, perhaps gotten it by the courts. Words matter. You know, maybe they don't matter when Trump is tweeting out or what Trump says, but words matter in documents that are going to be interpreted as law. And courts are very, very careful about parsing those words and what exactly, you know, these different regulations mean or what these different directives mean. And if you don't have the people in the positions that are necessary to review the documents that are going to be presented to the public or be law, then it could leave yourself open to a lot of different fault lines in the courts to overrule your administration.
And do we know where those delays or roadblocks are coming from? Because recent reports were that U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson had kind of a meltdown and was very upset about how many key positions had gone unfilled in the State Department.
You know, I just think they're happening all over the place. And to me, that's just an administration that doesn't have itself well put together and hasn't, you know, put the priority on filling these positions. And it was only when, you know, the press started pointing it out that they start filling some of the positions that have been left open. But, you know, at one point, I think it was like 900 positions that had not been, you know, that haven't been appointed that should have been. And that's crazy that we're this far into the administration. You know, we're nearly half a year in, and there's still so many posts that have not been filled yet. I think it just speaks to an incompetence in a way that may be uncomfortable for this administration to deal with. But, you know, get some people in these positions, and then you wouldn't leave yourself open to the criticism. I don't think that's a partisan critique. I think it's a competence critique.
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. Greg in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks. I was in San Francisco last weekend at a jazz fest, and someone had a large poster of a Photoshop of the image of Muhammad Ali standing over Sonny Liston, but Trump was in the where Liston was. So this is kind of Photoshop against Trump, and I'm wondering why we don't see more of that on CNN.
All right, thanks for that call, Greg. You're breaking up just a little bit. Harry, do you think it would be effective if there was more hit back, no pun intended, to these kinds of tweets and other kinds of messaging?
You know, I think, if I heard the caller correctly, I think one of the reasons why you haven't seen, you know, necessarily why the CNN thing became so big with, you know, the photoshopping of, you know, the FNN or whatever on the body that was getting body slammed by Trump was because if there's one thing the media likes to talk about, it's itself. right? I think that was part of the reason why this thing has so taken off and why, for instance, CNN made such an effort to find out who the person was who created the meme of, you know, having the CNN logo or the fake CNN logo on the face of the person getting body slammed by Trump. But, I think we see photoshopping all the time on Twitter. But I think the reason why this one took added importance was because, it featured a major news organization, and major news organizations, for the most part, aren't going to take that lying down.
And how much do we know about the person that created that? I know the Anti-Defamation League said that it was created by a Reddit user with a history of bigotry. What's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a person on a pro-Trump sub-forum, someone who in the past had pointed out that, at least according to the reporting, however accurate that is, that this is a person who previously had pointed out that there were a lot of Jewish people, for instance, at CNN, and pointed out who those people were. Additional reporting suggests that it's a middle-aged male, but we don't necessarily know who that person is for sure. CNN, even though they claim to know who it was, has not released that name, at least for the time being.
Let's move on to Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor. He was recently photographed sunbathing at a family party on a beach that had been closed to the public because the New Jersey government was shut down because of a budget impasse. What kind of reaction has there been?
I would say that this is probably the easiest score ever for people who want to come out against a politician on either side of the aisle. Universal condemnation of Chris Christie, whose approval rating in New Jersey, despite once being sky high, was only at 15% in the most recent Quinnipiac poll. Nobody in that state likes Chris Christie, except for maybe his wife and his children. They got to go to the beach. Of course, my favorite thing was that someone claimed that Christie was not sunbathing, and then when they showed him the picture, he said, yeah, he's wearing a hat. Therefore, he wasn't actually getting any sun. I mean, this is just a politician who realizes that his term ends at the end of this year and has no future in electoral politics whatsoever and is basically saying, forget about it. I'm going to do what I want. And I think that very much shows, and the public has had enough of Chris Christie, and I think Chris Christie has had enough of the New Jersey public.
Well, the New Jersey public, he was really angling hard to get a position in the Trump administration. He is preparing to leave the governor's office. Is there any future for him in Washington?
I don't put anything past Donald Trump, but the fact of the matter is that Chris Christie was already someone who was basically running during the period where Trump was preparing for the White House. He was running the transition, and Trump got rid of him. I'm not sure there's much of a future for Christie, even in the Donald Trump administration, although maybe you surprise us. I think at the end of the day, Chris Christie's future may be as a sports talk radio show host in New York City, which I actually think he'd be kind of good at.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Harry.
Thank you.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us for the Week in Washington, where we recap the top stories in national politics.